Hour two, J. Martin Amo, 104.5 The Zone. It is hard to get good help. And I don't mean on this show.
Boy.
If you know, you know. Reb Ryan's here. Jonathan Schaefer is here. Apparently, I can't say it. I'm Jason Martin. On Twitter, at Reb B. Tennessee, at Schaefer on Sports, at JMart Radio, at JMart and Ramon. Big Ed Press got some good lines today. Cousin Andrew went in the Zone TV and said, anyone else click the thumbs up button on the way in, or did y'all come in the back door? Big Ed Press says, I tried to click the thumbs up but couldn't find it. I heard it's a myth. All right. What's funny is if I go to the chat, most of the time I forget to do it too. I don't even think about thumbs up when it comes to YouTube stuff.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, every YouTube video that's worth its salt and a lot that aren't will remind you of those things.
Yeah. So I'm now looking at Thunder shirts.
Thunder.
Because of you, I'm looking up Thunder shirts. Because we've got the 4th of July coming up. Margo handles things pretty well, our dog. But if a Thunder shirt would make her feel more comfortable, I'm not against that.
I just know a lot of dogs really struggle with all the noise from the fireworks.
Well, usually we don't put her in our crate. Like for the first few years, I know, like on 4th of July and the idiots on the 2nd of July. And the 12th of July.
Oh, yeah. And everything in between at all hours.
Yeah.
It's like, it's 12:30 on July 7th, 12:30 noon.
Right.
I'm going to shoot off some fireworks.
Yeah, I'm shooting off fireworks. I don't believe in your creeds. I'll do it 2 weeks late. Terry McLaurin gets 3 years up to $71 million. Mm-hmm. So that's him taken care of. Debo, at least for now, is a Niner, and they'll probably get that taken care of. DK, you just haven't heard anything from. He went to camp, and since that point, he's just kind of there. It hasn't looked very contentious on that side. McLaurin is one of the few guys in Washington that you just got to make sure he's taken care of. You couldn't let him get out the door.
One of the better draft picks by that organization in the last several years.
They do pretty well getting Ohio State guys.
They do.
Chase Young and him are probably the two guys on the team that you just can't replace. They have some other good. Think about the Washington football team, which I wish they still were called.
Instead of the Commanders.
The Commanders. I still think the Washington Monuments is a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like that idea.
And then you've got the Monument Men. There's a play on
there's so many different
there.
Things that you can do there. You can bring in Nicolas Cage to be a mascot.
Yes.
National Treasure.
Yes.
Whole deal. They've got a lot of pieces that you like, and then they got Carson Wentz.
There's that.
And that's a big-time problem. Like, you got everything with the quarterback, which means you got nothing. McLaurin's doing that with piecemeal at quarterback.
Yes. And has for a while.
Like, imagine if they had somebody, what he could do.
Yeah. Well, and DK, I guess, is the one that hasn't been mentioned.
Yeah.
And hasn't gotten the bag yet because his guy's in Denver now. And he's got a couple of guys sitting there that I would describe as Joey Bag of Donuts. They're just guys. There's no franchise quarterback
there. Bruce says the Thunder shirt tried it twice, never worked. Maybe it worked in the car, he's saying, but it didn't work during storms.
I know some people swear by it.
I would like to know if there's something for motion sickness for dogs. I'm pretty sure Margaret gets motion sick in a car.
Okay.
Just based on how she reacts after a time, I think she starts to feel sick, and then she starts kind of barking and going crazy, like, get me out of this car.
Right. It's like, hey, this moving object.
Give me back my son. First time you ever saw Gary Sinise outside of Lieutenant Dan.
That's right.
Was in Ransom. Yeah, 3-year extension up to $71 million in new money places him among the NFL's 5 highest paid wide receivers. The bonus number is the biggest of everybody. The $28 million bonus is bigger than Nuke's 27.5, Tyreek's 25.5, and Julio's 25. One of these things is not like the other because of the age, not because of what. If we were talking 5 years ago, we could have had a different discussion.
Well, and with Terry McLaurin, durability is there. He's missed 5 games in 3 years, but played a full 17-game schedule last year. 222 catches, 3,090 yards for an average in his career of 13.9 per catch. Not shabby at all. 16 touchdowns. And then I'm looking at explosive plays. He has 9 catches over 40 yards. And that's like a double X. I mean, because an explosive play is 20 yards. He has 47 of those. So there's your production. So, and listen, you heard me say it many times. Coach Mack and I really liked him coming out of Ohio State and thought he would be one of the better wide receivers out of that class of 2019, and he's proven it.
Michael Burgett, fair point, says they have a lot of pieces you like. He's quoting me about the Commanders. And he said they also have Dan Snyder as an owner. Like,
there's that.
Touche. How long? I don't know. But he's like, he's telling people no to subpoenas.
He is going to stand on that hill.
He's going to do whatever it is he feels like he has to do. But eventually it's going to come for him. It has to, right? Like, he can't survive all of this.
The receipts come due.
Yeah, eventually something has to happen. So Davante Adams, 5 years, 140. Tyreek, 4 years, 120. AJ, 4 for 100. Stephon Diggs, 4 years, 96. Cooper Kupp, 3 for 80. Mike Williams, 3 for 60. Chris Godwin, 3 for 60. And McLaurin now 3 for up to 71. I didn't see what the guaranteed number was, but receivers are getting paid everywhere.
Yep.
They just are, which is why, look, the gamble that the Titans organization made, if you're right about Treylon Burks, you look like you're playing four-dimensional chess. Because a lot of people have put a lot of their available capital into one wide receiver in this offseason. Some, in the case of Miami, into multiple guys, but also a ton of money into one with Tyreek Hill alone. And it's, look, Tyreek Hill may well be worth it.
Mike Gesicki got paid too.
Mike Gesicki got paid. Sed Wilson got paid.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys got paid. But the Titans, they brought in Robert Woods on a very affordable number. Austin Hooper on an affordable number.
Oh, yeah, very affordable.
Yes.
1 year, $6 million.
Right.
I mean, that seems like chump change compared to this other stuff.
I think, the whole thing, and we know this, the whole thing comes down to whether or not Treylon Burks turns into something for you, and I don't even think that needs to happen in the first month of the season. Everybody's going to have to, as Coach Mack says, keep your powder dry on it. But if you can create something out of him, you've reset your clock. Which is why it felt like this draft was more for the future than the present. But he's got the right kind of people, especially Woods, to lean on and learn from. Somebody that's been in the league and gone through it, highs and lows, good organizations, but some that didn't win, and now he's coming off a Super Bowl.
Right.
And 2 Super Bowl appearances with the Rams, and success with a great young head coach and all these things. Like, Burks has the right guy to potentially mentor him. And I think that's what you want.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the future rides on whether or not he can become a guy that we're talking about 3-4 years from now. He's signed an extension for X amount of dollars or whatever. And then you look at the AJ deal, and it doesn't matter what he goes and does, because you ended up winning in the long run because you created space to, who knows what it enables you to do. One of them is make sure Jeff Simmons stays here.
That's almost priority one.
It has to be.
I mean, if I'm looking at the roster, that's got to get done.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you mentioned this, too, and that Terry McLaurin gets this money since we last spoke yesterday on the show. Mike Keith and I did an official Titans podcast, an OTP, that I think is going to drop later today, if it hasn't already, about we each have 5 candidates that need to have a good first 2 weeks of Titans training camp. Now, when you're sitting there listening, you're like, Rhett, ding dong. Listen, everybody needs it first. Yes, that's true. But there's a handful that we really need to have that first 2 weeks of really good practice going into the first preseason game at Baltimore, August 11th, for positional reasons. You know, there's some offensive linemen on there. There's some receivers on there.
Kind of what it felt like if I were trying to come up with some of the names you guys would have had. I would think Raidens is probably
bingo
on there.
Mm-hmm.
I would think Farley
bingo
would be mentioned on there.
Yep.
Treylon.
Yep.
Needs to kind of get back where he is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd like to see Petit Frere, but Radins is the more important factor because he's year two, and you just you need him to be something for you this year.
Well, we mentioned one of mine was Nate Davis, who, you know, Jim White had a good article about him just the other day on TennesseeTitans.com about how now Nate was working on his own during OTAs, but he came in for the minicamp and was there. And looked a little different. He's gotten a nutritionist, gotten a chef, and is working. And he has kind of resculpted his body. He's kept the weight but added muscle. And he knows how important this is. Obviously, it's the last year of his rookie deal. And he knows that he did not have anywhere near as good a year in 2021 as he did in year two of his career in 2020, where he was arguably the best offensive lineman in a Titans uniform. And I brought him up as one of the ones that needs a first good 2 weeks of training camp because whoever is the right tackle, whether it's Radins or Nicholas Petit Frere, it's that synergy of a line anyway. You know, Ben Jones coming back at center, that's important to the continuity of this thing and how well he reads calls for the quarterback behind him. But if Nate Davis returns to form, that's going to make Ben Jones better to his left and whoever is to his right. It's just a thing that happens. It's that the synergy that you're looking for. But, yeah, we've, you know, it's funny you bring that up because, you know, and Treylon Burks was one because whatever you want to make of what's been reported with asthma and these things, look, when you're a top draft pick and you have made the rounds going through the pre-draft process, you don't have a lot of time to work out. And I'm not saying he came in out of shape, but I'm sure those have speculated those things. As long as they get whatever it is going on with the asthma stuff straight, he'll be fine. He just needs to get out there and start stacking practices.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to fall behind.
No, that's the thing.
The development process.
You get behind in the queue is what you get.
Yeah.
And another one I put in there was David Long Jr. because he missed so much time on the back half of the season, and he's the guy now.
So I would have thought maybe Rashad Weaver would be somebody, again, that missed a lot of time that...
You know, he could have been in consideration for that, yeah. Sure. But I put David Long Jr. because he is the guy next to Zach Cunningham now. There is no Rashawn Evans. There is no Jayon Brown. And both of those had an effect on his career in helping him become a better linebacker. And the only reason I put him on there is because availability is what he's got to have. His production, don't have any doubt about that.
That's an interesting.
He'll do fine.
That's an interesting topic we can jump back into a little bit later on in the show and even get people's thoughts on it potentially, who they would put on that list of five guys that you really want to see come out of the gates hot when we get to actual camp here. Just under a month from right now. We come back, Bill Bender, we'll talk some college with him. Also a guy in Ohio that can speak to what's happening certainly on the pro football team there. A lot of questions here. Not as many questions here as there are in Cleveland. No doubt about that.
No.
It's Jay Martin on 104.5 The Zone.
Searching HVAC near here.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Wow. Nobody local? Huh.
Wait, what? We are an HVAC company literally in your neighborhood. Why is she not seeing us?
Just all the big chains. Well, it is what it is.
What in the... Can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local HVAC providers. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
So, speaking of the 80s, we were talking about this during the break. Kate Bush, who originally recorded Running Up That Hill. I'm a fan of Placebo Virgin. If you haven't heard that and you've watched Stranger Things Season 4 and you've seen that scene with Sadie Sink, she's made $2.3 million. You found this, Rhett. In royalties
this
because
summer.
Of Stranger Things Season 4. This is since like the end of May.
Yeah.
She's made $2.3 million. When's the last time you thought of Kate Bush? Well, she owns her masters. It just shows, look, you get put in the right thing at the right time. She made $1 million just from streaming alone from June 16th through the 23rd.
Yeah. First of all, that shows the power of Netflix and streaming services.
Yeah.
Younger generations getting introduced to songs way before they were born.
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, that's the literal definition of mailbox money right there.
And again, if you've heard that and you like it, again, though, I mean, you got people who never knew that song existed. So to them, it's a brand new deal. It actually briefly took the spot on the Billboard Global 200. It sits
crazy?
At number 5 right now. That's a 1985 song. You go back from 1985 to 1984, you get Ray Parker Jr. and the Ghostbusters theme we just played, and that brings us Bill Bender, who's a big fan of Ghostbusters 2.
There it is.
Which is never not going to be something that I want to discuss. Bill, what's going on?
That was a great 6 degrees of separation there. I don't know how you did it, but I'll applaud you. And I've been watching The Old Man on FX.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. That would be my TV recommendation for you guys right now.
Bill, that's a great series. I have started, I've seen the first two of that. I have not seen last week's episode, but he is fantastic in that.
Yeah, that goes for everything he does.
John Lithgow's great too.
Yes.
It's off to a heck of a start for a TV show if you're looking for one, for sure.
Yeah, yes. My recommendation to everybody right now is Only Murders in the Building, which the second season just came back to Hulu. Just an absolute joy that started last year. That if you got Hulu and you haven't watched that, I don't know what you're doing with your life. So, Arch, we'll talk about the fact that you're in Ohio and what's happening in the state of Ohio from a professional standpoint, at least a little bit. But tell me what your thoughts are on Arch picking Texas, what that means for Sarkisian, and maybe what kind of pressure that might put on Sarkisian.
I mean, they've landed 7 recruits since. So a lot of people want to play with Arch, and that's not a surprise. I think it's their biggest recruit since Vince Young, at least, and maybe even in – bigger in a sense that they're going to be able to recruit around him. They're going to have a legitimate college football superstar. And obviously the expectations are there. My buddies and I have kind of been debating what's more pressure, being the next Manning or being the quarterback at Texas. And I argued, I think it's at being the quarterback at Texas, because I don't think anybody's expecting Arch Manning to like be better than Peyton Manning. But once you take on that quarterback at Texas, you're expected to win national championships no matter how unrealistic the expectations are.
Bill, a couple of things for you on Arch. Where do you see this in terms of, I think every generation has somebody that's like, this was the biggest recruit. This guy's got to be one of the biggest recruits ever because of the lineage, the last name, and all that kind of stuff. And then how weird is it that it was such an under-the-radar, old-school announcement? There wasn't a TikTok video or anything of that nature.
No, that was cool. You know, that was a good – and he doesn't need to. You know what I mean? Like, I think he wants to be his own person. The way he did his recruitment was very old-school, very quiet. Not a lot of, like you said, videos and tweets and TikToks, and he just tweets, hey, I'm going here. And, you know, I'm an old school guy, obviously, if we're going to be talking about Ghostbusters and 80s movies. So I definitely appreciated the way he did it. And I think, I mean, I can't think of a recruit bigger than him in terms of the name value and all those. And I went back to when Peyton played. Now, remember, if we had Twitter and those kind of things when Peyton was around, it would have been the same thing. It would have been larger than life.
Yeah, I saw the Vegas markets. At least I got an email yesterday, and it suggested that the Vegas is still favoring him not to start week one of 2023, which might make Quinn Ewers happy. That to me is still the most fascinating part about this is Ewers leaves Ohio State. He's kind of the poster child for NIL early on. Now he goes to Texas and he gets a year. And I don't know what he's going to do, but I don't know what he has to do in order to hold on to that job with that fan base, with Arch Manning also coming to town next year.
Yeah, it's almost like he's competing for it this year. A lot of people are going to watch, Texas fans in particular. They'll have their minds made up probably with how he plays against Alabama in week two. But, you know, I went back and looked, and Peyton didn't start right off the bat. Colquitt did, and then he was behind Todd Helton on the depth chart. I think Todd Helton made the right choice with baseball just a little bit. And then Eli didn't start his freshman year. He played behind Romero Miller. So I guess that's possible, but I just think in this transfer portal era where kids want to play right away, Texas will have to answer that question in time. But if they're able to keep Ewers for the next 2 years and he's as good as advertised, that's going to be a cute coup for the Longhorns for sure.
Do you feel like if that's the time frame, if indeed it would be a redshirt season or something like that for Arch, then he becomes your inaugural quarterback when you join the Southeastern Conference?
I mean, the SEC is just hoping that happens with all the money, the revenue, the eyeballs on whoever. I mean, I'm trying in my head trying to figure out who they're going to have Texas open with in the SEC. When they, you know what I mean? Like, who's the first conference game going to be? And I still think it's going to be – I think they're going to do it. This is my prediction. I think they'll do it Oklahoma versus Texas in SEC game. And that'll be their first SEC game. Somehow they'll work the schedule to make that happen. I remember when Florida State and Miami did that. When they joined the ACC, they played on Labor Day. And coincidentally, Miami's still looking for that first ACC championship. But yeah, I think the big money. I'll put it to you this way. So we were at my son's lacrosse practice last week, and I'm in Ohio, obviously, and people were talking about Arch Manning coming to Ohio Stadium in 2025. That's how much of an impact his recruitment had.
Well, there's a lot of people that I saw a Browns Reddit thread, which boy, that was going into a land of sadness. I got to tell you, Bill. But I saw a response that basically said they're playing 10D chess because they're just trying to land Arch Manning in 2025, and that's why they made the Deshaun Watson deal the way that they did, because it sets them up to have the number one pick and be one of the worst teams by that point because of what they've committed. So there's a lot happening there. You wrote about a month ago-ish about the Alabama, Texas A&M, Saban, Jimbo thing. Jimbo saying that, you know, we've moved on and all this. Nothing happens in Hoover, which I don't think anybody was particularly surprised by. And Sankey's trying to get a hold on everything. What, do you think Jimbo has actually done himself any favors by how this has played out since the, I don't know, pro wrestling babyface promo he tried to cut the day after Saban talked to his boosters?
I think he lost the argument. You know, at first, you know, he got the soundbite, but he lost the argument is the way I kind of put it. Because we all remember that press conference and all the fire and shade and whatever term they use, kids use now. I lose track, but he definitely won that part. And then at the end, it's like Saban made all the points he was going to make about NIL, about recruiting, and he had answers for all those things. And if he doesn't say – I've been thinking about this for a while. It's like if he doesn't say Texas A&M and Jackson State, it's not a big deal. I think he did it on purpose, by design, to have this argument and have this big discussion so Nick Saban could get his points across. Because now I think the pressure's on Jimbo Fisher. Now that you've called out Saban like that, you got to go win one now, right? Like if they don't beat Alabama this year – there's going to be more on Jimbo than Nick Saban.
Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, he has to prove he's not Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M in terms of what he's been able to accomplish. And the fact that you're pointing to how great his recruiting class is basically putting more pressure on him. And I my theory since the start of mentioning Jackson State was just to tell those with money at Alabama, look, it's not just Texas A&M you guys got to worry about. Look at what Deion is doing over here. Look at what they're trying to pull. I feel like everything that comes out of Nick Saban's mouth is strategic in some way to benefit him and his program.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're exactly right, because a week later, Eli Holstein commits. And I think they're doing a little bit better on the recruiting trail since. And everybody's navigating how to do this NIL thing. Some schools are having more success than others. I think Texas is in large part because of Arch, and I was speaking with Anwar Richardson yesterday from Orange Bloods, and he made a good point. It's like a lot of people that come to Texas now, it might not be because they're going to get the NIL opportunities right away, but you could get them just from playing with Arch. And Ohio State and Notre Dame are killing it in recruiting right now too, and in two different ways. So there's different ways to do it. And obviously Alabama A&M and the SEC powerhouses are going to continue to recruit well.
How impressive is what Brian Hartline is doing at Ohio State? It just seems like every year there's a fleet of wide receivers that have first round grades before you ever even see them. And I know you wrote about this just a couple of days ago. What they're doing at Ohio State from a wide receiver perspective is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. And he's built a room there that might be the best ever. I mean, I went in and looked at some of the better receiving rooms of all time, and they've got a chance to do it just off the sheer number of guys that they're going to have. They could have five first-round picks position in 3 years. And for Brian Hartline to do that, it's not just what he's done with the development on the field. It's the way he recruits them. It's how Ohio State kind of fell into him, too. Remember, Zach Smith was the receivers coach that was dismissed during the Urban Meyer scandal, and then they hire Brian Hartline, and he becomes arguably the best position coach in the country. So there's a stroke of luck there. Somebody asked me the other day, why isn't he a head coach somewhere else? And I think the answer is he could be Ohio State's coach someday, depending on how long Ryan Day's there. And Ryan Day's set up to be there a long time, but I could see Brian Hartline sticking there for a long time as well.
Who's the second best team in the SEC East right now today, if you had to put it out there? I think we all know who number one is, but who's number two?
Oh, man, it's either Kentucky or Tennessee right now. Florida, there are a lot of unknowns. If Anthony Richardson is as advertised with Billy Napier, I think they could be pretty good. Kentucky, I would probably say Kentucky will be ranked higher, but I like the direction of Tennessee. I like that offense. You know, we're going to have our list. As Schaefer and I were talking about before I came on, it is list season. Our quarterback list will be out next week. And Hendon Hooker is a top 10 quarterback. So when you have a top 10 quarterback in an offense, I mean, I don't think I'm wrong, right?
No, I don't either. No.
He's right there. So it's going to be very cool to see what their offense does and if they can. I mean, what's progress, though? If they go 10-2 and lose to Georgia and Alabama, is that progress? I mean, I think it would be.
I think it would be, too, as long as Florida. I think that, and Ramon has mentioned this, and as being a Vol for Life that is so close to that program, he said eventually you got to start knocking off somebody in the Big Three, and then we can start talking about knocking off multiples. And the third one is obviously Florida. This is the year many of us believe they should be able to beat Florida. Like, obviously, that's not going to be an easy task, but this is the year you should be able to step up and potentially knock them off.
Yeah, and that's where I think that, I mean, the offense scores a ton of points. They played an entertaining, they had one of the more entertaining bowl games last year, even though they didn't win. That was a fun game to watch. So if they can get some stops behind it, continue recruiting well, I think the progress is there. Kentucky's solid. They're a program on solid footing. Another program that I'm interested in the SEC East is South Carolina, coming off 7-6, and they've never had a quarterback as talented as Spencer Rattler. Not in my lifetime. And I know his career didn't go the way they wanted at Oklahoma, but he is a five-star quarterback. He is very accurate, and it'd be interesting to see what the Gamecocks do with him at quarterback.
So you're in Ohio, obviously. How much of a laughingstock right now, or how many people are dunking on the Cleveland Browns organization with everything that's going on? We come to a place, Bill, where of all people, Baker Mayfield, even in the state of Ohio, seems to be the sympathetic figure.
Yeah, we'll see where they go with the investigation today and what the penalty. I think everybody's just kind of waiting and seeing. We're in wait and see mode now to see what the suspension is going to be. And last night there was, even whether it was in a meeting at work or last night, we were playing a game did this guy start for the Browns or not since 1999, and pulling out some of the names that have started. And obviously they're going to be on, I think, 34. But, whether it was a Spurgeon win or a Deshaun Kaiser or Connor Shaw started for the Browns.
South Carolina.
Point. Yeah. So I don't know if they have any Tennessee guys on there. The chances are they do. There's 33 guys on there.
Do they? I don't think that they did. I know they had Kelly Holcomb if you want to.
Well, if Dobbs starts a game, then they'll have one.
That's right. Dobbs is on that roster right now.
That's exactly right. There you go. I mean, you can join this very long, distinguished list of quarterbacks, but and I don't know what they're going to do, because I do have a feeling that Deshaun Watson's going to be suspended for a lengthy amount of time. I don't think Baker's going to play for him, so you're going to have Jacoby Brissett for probably at minimum, I would say, 6 to 8 games, possibly the whole year. and you're in a division that has Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. So I think the Browns are in a little bit of trouble.
I don't think that's deep analysis, Bill, but you get paid for much better analysis than that. You feel like you're right on that. But that's all right.
That they're in trouble? Yeah, they're definitely. Well, no, some of my buddies in Browns fan, they're trying to like make the case, oh, we'll be okay with Brissett. I'm like, no, you're going to go like 6-11 or 7-10 if Deshaun Watson sits the whole season, and this could go down as the single worst trade in NFL history. I mean, that's not hyperbole either.
No, it's not. Tell your friends just to make sure they have a good beverage of choice during the season, because I think it's going to be it could potentially be a very long year for them. Bill, it's always a pleasure, brother. Thanks so much, man.
Hey, no problem, guys. Have a good one.
Indeed, thanks. That's Bill Bender, Ghostbusters 2 fan.
He's in the minority.
What in the look? Viggo the Carpathian's still the most frightening thing I've ever seen. This side of the Zodiac murder scene on the hillside. That is the single scariest thing I've ever seen in a movie. And I've mentioned it many times before. The reason why is because it's in broad daylight and it's just a couple on a picnic blanket.
Yeah.
This dude just shows Baronessa, up and starts stabbing people.
Yeah.
Irrespective of anything else that's going on, he just goes over and kills these two people.
It's
just
very like ominous looking hood. Yeah.
That whole deal, the way he walks over to him and just no chill.
Hands on the rope, says tie each other up.
Frightening
Lake
stuff.
Berryessa.
Because it felt like it was so just on the level, just normal for this guy. 615-737-1045. Deep analysis from Bill about the Browns being in trouble.
Hey, let's mock our guests while we have them on.
That's right.
Look, you know what you're getting when you come into this show. You're going to have a good time.
Hey, thanks for doing this favor. By the way, you kind of suck.
That's not what I said. He gave great analysis right up to that answer. It's Jay Martin and Mo, 104.5 The Zone.
You know, I think I got frustrated with it not happening before, you know, like mini camp and all those things. But that's the stuff that's out of my control. And so, you know, let those things happen and fall into place. And so right now I'm just controlling what I can and enjoying this.
That's Baker Mayfield at his football camp in Norman. Because we were playing a Ghostbusters game, somebody on the chat mentioned, yeah, you know you're paying Huey Lewis also for that. He got a $5 million settlement for it because of the plagiarism attack from I Want a New Drug, which is the exact same beat, basically. And we've seen a few of those. We saw Tom Petty in Red Hot Chili Peppers with Danny California and Mary Jane's Last Dance a few years ago. I was just kind of looking into it a little bit more.
John Fogerty got sued for ripping off himself.
Yeah. 5 or 6 times.
The first one, I was telling this, Jason this just a second ago, the first one that I know of in a major court battle, George Harrison's My Sweet Lord is basically a ripoff of the Chiffons hit He's So Fine. And George Harrison had to pay them $1 million. This was in like 1970, 71, something like that.
Well, these didn't go to court, but Led Zeppelin was accused many times of ripping off a lot of blues songs from like the 40s.
And Greta Van Fleet's being accused of ripping off Led Zeppelin literally every day.
Yeah. That first album, the newest ones haven't been as
they're fine.
Much.
I'd have fun with that story. Oh, absolutely. First off, if they want to be a new Led Zeppelin, they can knock themselves out. They're talented.
And when you got a guy who can sing like that, then do it.
I don't care.
Then the Robin Thicke Blurred Lines, you know, that whole deal.
That's right.
They didn't even talk to Marvin Gaye's family or folks about using, you know, all of that. And he got hammered for that.
And then Robin Thicke, it just kind of went poorly for him in general after that.
He went Blurred Lines.
Yeah, it didn't go well. But I was looking into it a little bit to see what Huey Lewis got out of that. Harold Ramis tapped Lindsey Buckingham first to do the Ghostbusters theme. And Lindsey said no, because he didn't want to be soundtrack guy. So basically he's Tobey Maguire not wanting to be Spider-Man. Didn't want to be typecast, because he had done Holiday Road for National Lampoon's Vacation. Yep. So instead of being typecast as soundtrack guy, Lindsey Buckingham became typecast as nothing.
And waiting for him to be reinvited back into Fleetwood Mac and tour some more and get some retirement coins. But yeah, what I said to you, I was like, you want to be Kenny Loggins or do you want to just sit at home? So make nothing.
Right. So then they went to Huey Lewis, and he was doing Back to the Future, which came out in 85, and a few other things. So he was just too busy to do it. So they went to Ray Parker Jr. And then, of course, well, you can see if you go
vicariously, they did it through
They still got Huey Lewis. Oh boy.
Oh man.
How many, you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
How many times was that song played the summer that record came out?
I played it, constantly.
I mean,
I didn't get to see, Ghostbusters. I was six. I saw it on tape, like, I think 86.
I saw it at the movies.
First time I saw it, it was one of my favorites.
I loved it. I saw it at the movies. And that's part of that. The summer of 1984, first of all, in musical history, is amazing. But the summer of 84 had the charted songs during that window of time. Unbelievable. I mean, because you're talking about Prince, Purple Rain. You're still getting some cuts off of Thriller.
Yeah, definitely getting some Michael Jackson.
Yeah. You got Bruce Springsteen's commercial success,
Born in the USA. And all that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one after the other. And this is when Madonna starts her mercurial rise with her last single off her first record. That was another charted hit. I think Borderline was the summer of 84. But, I mean, there's all this stuff going on.
We were talking about music earlier. You mentioned everybody loves to rule the world, or everybody wants to rule the world. Tears for Fears. I said, that's literally my favorite song of all time.
Play on repeat.
Literally would use it as a theme for everything I do. There will be many times I'll just put it on in the car. It never doesn't make me feel good.
And you're looking down, you're doing 90.
Yeah.
And you're on West End.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
I get a ticket.
Yeah.
There's a reason Dennis Miller used it for 11,
that's where I really discovered it. That and when I was at the rollabout on my roller skates when I was a kid.
It's an all skate.
It's a backward skate, baby.
Couples only.
615-737-1045 is the telephone number. Scariest scene in a movie. Now people are taking that. I see that on the chat. Travis says, as far as scariest movie character, Scar was holding Mufasa's skull, for goodness sake. Not wrong.
And then we're talking animated things, that'd probably be the top of the list.
It would definitely be up there. Like I said, I will submit to you that scene in Zodiac on the hillside is the scariest thing I've ever seen, because it looked like it could happen any day, any hillside, at all times. And the dude survived it, and we were talking about it during the break, and I'm like, nah, I don't want to survive that.
No.
Because there's no way I ever sleep again, and probably I don't have my mind anymore.
And let me say this to everybody listening. If you're a true crime fan like I am, especially when you see depictions in biopics like this, and you've never seen Zodiac from, I think, 2007.
Yeah, the David Fincher.
It's amazing. It's Robert Downey Jr. It basically relaunched his career. Mark Ruffalo, who I love, is in it. It's a great cast.
It's really
and
solid.
It's really well done. And it's one of those that they get the cast right. They get the clothing.
Right.
The clothing. Everything's period correct, but the cars, the scenery, the clothes, all of it. And you're like, okay, I'm sitting right there in, you know, the late 60s, early 70s in San Francisco.
David Beauclair will join us in about 25 minutes from right now. We'll talk to him about his piece at SI about the five bold predictions he has for the Titans season. You won't want to miss that. We're going to come back and talk some Freddie Freeman, because this is fascinating to me how this has gone. It's J. Martin Ramon, 104.5 The Zone.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.